Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage and Justin Bowers!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Justin.
I'm Alex.
What?
No.
You're Pete.
No.
I wish I was.
And our man in the booth, Booth Man.
Booth Man!
Our Foley artist of the night. He's going to be tickling the microphone all night long.
It's no coincidence that Alex couldn't be here and none of this stuff works.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. He took all the technology with us. But I like to consider it like Leno stepped down and now like a young, hip host is taking over. And that's me. No, you're like Ferguson. Well, you're kind of weird. You have a weird accent.
I think it's weird how Alex took his laptop and went home. He was just like, I'm not going to play anymore.
I don't blame him for taking his laptop. I would have poured orange juice on it. We have a very exciting show tonight.
Yeah, we have
two great guests, which we're going to dive right into. So let's welcome to the stage Chris Claremont and Douglas Wolf.
Yeah!
Alex took them too.
Yeah.
Come on out, guests.
I don't usually sit in this power position, so it's a whole new... How do I look here?
Powerful.
Thank you. Okay, good.
Okay.
So, down to business. Chris, let's start talking to you. You have quite a book coming out, X-Men Forever.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about the genesis of this project and what it is?
Well, essentially picking up where I left off. One way you could look at it is saying that Forever starts with issue 4 of X-Men.
Indeed.
And seeing what happens next. So the basic idea is to take the X-Men from where Jim Lee and I left it and have some fun. See what trouble the team can get into and what kind of adventures I can get them out of.
Now, has this been germinating in your head the entire time? And is that where Forever comes from? The time between then and now?
Oh, come on.
It's not an insult.
Well, actually, I was sitting down with my Scrabble board.
Is that how you write? That's how I write. Just shake the tiles.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's at least how I come up with titles.
Yeah.
No, it's the ideas were all there. I never thought I'd get a chance to pull them all together again, but things, the universe changed its orientation, some possibilities came to fruition, and what's fascinating to me is as I started thinking about it and started putting all the pieces together, working from the premise that we'll start where I was, exactly where I left off, and just go in the direction I was going to go in, I began factoring in all the changes that have occurred in the world since then, and then the characters' view of the world and the world's view of them, and things that I had wanted to do back in the day but were restricted by the reality of the fact that they were in a vast and interactive production world where I couldn't... X-Men was not a standalone title. There were 14 other titles connected to it. Now and forever, we are effectively a standalone title. We live in our own Marvel universe that is independent of the mainstream Marvel universe, and frankly speaking, much more fun. It's much less crowded. And pieces began clicking really nicely together. It's like we could finally answer the question, what would happen in the real world, as we understand it, where if you had a character hijack 24 thermonuclear weapons, put them in Earth orbit, threaten to blow one up, you know, well, blow one up to prove his point and threaten to drop them if anybody got uppity towards him. And yes, the X-Men saved the day and defeated Magneto, but how would everybody down on the ground feel about that? How would the Russians, well, the Russians are passe, how would the Chinese feel about it? And the Indians and the Israelis and the, you know, everybody outside the United States, not to mention the United States itself. And would they feel gratitude towards the X-Men for saving them, or would they feel a little uncomfortable because this is, after all, a clandestine group of kids? Because they're all substantially still children. I mean, teenagers, 20-something, maybe. And what would be the result? What would be the follow-on to that? And the more that I and Mark and Sarah, the editor, began playing with it, the more interesting it got. And it's gotten to be quite fascinating.
How much did your plans change from what you wanted to do back then to what you're doing in X-Men Forever?
Not at all, and totally.
That's a tricky answer.
No, because, well, not that tricky, because you're dealing with primal moments and primal archetypes. This isn't, we decided purely by authorial fiat and practicality to, that the first three issues occurred in the spring of 2009. Therefore, we pick up like 5 minutes later, and it's the summer of 2009. We tell time in comics in a miraculously compressed manner. But it's our world. It's our reality. It is something that the readers can identify with and relate to. And the conflicts and questions, the conflicts that the team faces and the questions that are resolved are relevant to the readers today, not the readers of 15, 16 years ago. And the farther we went down the line with this, the farther I went in taking apart the characters and the story and putting it back together again, the more interesting and enticing it became to me. Because, quite frankly, I was wondering if I'd run out of ideas. And the weird thing was discovering that the farther I got, the more interesting and varied and exciting it became.
That's great.
Yeah, that's good news.
The news is good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
On a completely unrelated topic, what did you think of the Wolverine movie?
That's a random...
Well, you were at the premiere, am I
correct
in that?
Yeah.
How was that?
Len got to sit next to the director.
You did.
Dang. It was Len's. This is Len's night, not mine. I had the last three. You know, all he did was create this character. And get no credit for it ever in the list. So it was wonderful. I mean, the cast was a wonderful cast. I mean, you know, Hugh Jackman has made Wolverine his own. I mean, the irony for me looking at the X-Men movies was looking at Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry and realizing, well, they're the right heights. They're just the wrong characters. You know, Wolverine is 5'2", and Storm is 6'4". But
so you want Halle Berry to be Wolverine?
It's an interesting concept.
I like it.
But, you know, the fascinating thing about Jackman is that literally within the first 5 minutes of X-Men, he made the character his own. And it's only gotten more, his hold over Wolverine and the power of the presentation has only gotten stronger and deeper since then. It doesn't matter that he's the wrong height from the comic book. This isn't a comic book, it's a film, and it works. You look at Wolverine, you look at Hugh Jackman, and they're one. And Lev Schreiber, I mean, by the same token, whoever thought Sabretooth was Jewish?
Yeah.
Well, especially in my conception, Sabretooth is supposedly Wolverine's father.
Right.
Yeah.
Which adds a whole new dimension to the concept that I don't even want to go into at this point. But the interaction of the two of them on screen was just wonderful. I mean, I got my reaction at the end of the film, Len's too, actually, was, okay, when's the next one?
Wow.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
No fucking around. Excuse me.
That's allowed.
When's the next one? Because if they follow the X-Men model, the second movie's the charm, because that's where they have the opportunity to stand back and actually play with the character and the concept and come up with something cool. On the other hand, their Gambit was really neat. Their Stryker was, Stryker was excellent. I believe Deadpool gets his own movie.
Yeah.
I think it's worth $300 million, which is what it's done so far.
Yeah.
So, I want to see the next one, which is...
It might take a while. Not as long as X-Men Forever.
You never know. I mean,
yeah, you're right.
From Fox's point of view, I don't see them wanting to wait. The only reason X-Men 2 took a while is because they forgot they'd actually broken the model and not signed everybody to three movie contracts. They'd signed them to options. But Fox didn't think the first movie would do any business. They thought it would do 60 and walk, not 170, 180. And that was just domestic. And, they had to gather everybody together and renegotiate from top to bottom. And by then, of course, Halle Berry won an Oscar.
Right.
So it was a much more adventurous negotiation, I suspect, than they'd anticipated.
Well, great. Douglas, yes. Let's move on to you for a bit. So tell us about your book, Reading Comics, how graphic novels work and what they mean.
Came out a couple of years ago, came out in paperback last year, won an Eisner and a Harvey last year.
Congratulations.
It's basically a book of essays about, like, the first third of it is just sort of comics theory and comics history, and then the other two thirds are essays about particular cartoonists and particular books. Just looking really closely at the visual language and the way that the narratives are constructed, and it was fun to write. It's, a lot of it had appeared other places. Initially, I read about comics for New York Times Book Review and the Washington Post and Salon, a few other places. And so bits of it were cannibalized from there.
And have you been a comic book reader your whole life? And you are still.
I have.
We talked about it.
Yes, I. Yes. I'm a Wednesday person. God help me.
You're safe. You're safe.
Yeah, this is a safe environment for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Fortunately, it's Tuesday.
I'm jonesing already.
So we're all freaking out.
Yeah, started when I was 8 or 9, and
wow.
Yeah, tried the path ever since.
A lot of people online talk about your book as a book that doesn't just shit on superhero comics for the sake of indie comics.
No, because I love superhero comics with a desperate and sort of illicit passion.
How do you find...
I'm buying your book.
What are the common threads between the two? Most people try to separate them so clearly. Like, what are the common threads that you found?
They're comics. I mean, this.
good start.
This is the medium. This is the way that the stories are told. And there's some distinction to be made between art comics and mainstream comics. But there is so much crossover between them. There's so much overlap. It doesn't make sense to think of genre or think of superheroes as something that does away with all the craft and all the interesting stuff about the way the comics are made. And it also doesn't make sense to think of art comics or single creator things as something that does away with all the interesting stuff that you get in these gigantic shared fictional narratives. So,
that's great. Well, without further ado, let's move on with our first section of the show, which we like to call the Oh, that wasn't recorded, that was done live.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
live. Oh, okay.
Thank you. The first time we're going to talk about...
We might just apologize again for the fact that there's no video and audio.
That's all right. Look, this is real. First time we're going to talk about Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk number 6.
They still make that?
Yes. They're kind of ripping off your model. Not doing the book for a number of years. And finally doing it. Of course, they were just lazy, and you were doing a bunch of other things. But
actually, I claim the Fifth Amendment since my editor edits the Ultimates. I know nothing.
Okay, good. Well, then we won't ask you much about this comic. So this ended this much ballyhooed series. What did we all think? Pete,
well,
you like fighting.
I am a big fan of fighting and violence.
Neither of which are present in a Wolverine book, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the funny thing about this this comic. I mean, it sounds like my perfect comic. Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Yeah,
I'll tell you what could go wrong. The last page is the two of them walking into the sunset.
Oh my god!
It's
wonderful.
We ripped off Al and Jay.
It's not for me.
That's beautiful.
And this is a story that was, like, this issue is a story written around a set piece. There's a really clever bit of plotting you can tell he's been sitting on for 4 years.
Yeah.
And the
Who?
Entire. What?
Who's been sitting
Lindelof.
On?
Lindelof.
Damon Lindelof. Famous for his work on the television show, which one is it?
Cheers. L to the O to
yes.
the S.
That's it.
Lost. Great.
Well, that explains a lot.
So is that
and
comic.
You know, this whole story
yeah.
is constructed around this one really clever idea, but then everything else seems like it was just like, okay, and then we have to figure out how we're going to get to that. That clever thing.
Right.
Just
and when you're doing coy writing like that, I don't know. It's just and this whole thing is kind of over it. The whole book has been so. I don't know. It didn't do it for me.
It was. It definitely tried to do a lot of different things, which I tip my hat to. I mean, it started with Wolverine being ripped in half.
Right.
You know, and that's an interesting starting point. You know, where it's like he's got his head, and then his legs were
he's
sticking out over here.
Yeah.
Are we talking about this issue?
No.
Oh.
Beginning of the arc.
Oh.
That was the real mission statement for the book.
Yeah.
Ripped the dude in half. And also Naked She-Hulk was kind of the theme of this. Yeah.
How do you rip him in half?
Good point.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
The
Great
ultimate,
enthusiasm.
Yeah. In the ultimate world...
there's no adamantium.
No,
no
there
he
is.
He
has adamantium.
Yeah.
But
there's just like a weak joint somewhere in the middle of the spine. It's a little hazy down there.
He hasn't been eating his calcium or iron. I don't know.
Rust sits in him. And not only did he rip him in half, then he tossed him up a mountain. So half of his body, he'd spent the first couple issues crawling toward his legs.
Yeah. And he could smell his feet. That's how he knew where they were.
He could smell his feet.
Oh my God.
I feel I'm missing something really essential.
That's the
no,
thing.
No.
No,
we
he's
all
a totally
are.
Different character.
Yeah.
One thing. He's totally
yeah. That's a thing.
Nice.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Hey, gonna be all week.
So yeah, I mean, this will obviously be a big trade. You guys out there, did you read this? Like it? Dislike
no.
it?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to.
Glad we talked about it.
To something in the same wheelhouse. Wolverine number 72, the penultimate chapter.
Woo!
Max.
Yeah.
Go Max.
Thank you. Pete, what did you think of this?
All right, now what was hurtful for me was you called it in the first issue. You said, here's a story about old man Logan, a man who said, you know what, I'm no longer going to be Wolverine, I'm keeping my claws inside, you know, I've given it up, I'm raising a family, and I'm just going to be some normal dude.
What all the Wolverine fans want, raising a family.
Well, it was an interesting scenario. It was an interesting scenario to see, like, all right, let's see what old man Logan's like, and would it be cool, would it be enjoyable? And it had a lot of great stuff in it. And you said, you know, I don't know why you're going to go so excited. It's going to be the last issue, and he's going to pop his gloves and go crazy, and you're going to love it. And you know what I did? I did love it.
Well, that's not and surprising.
Was...
There are two pages in this comic that I'm demanding back. Like, I want
no!
these guys
no!
owe me. These guys owe me two pages,
no
and
way.
Here's what the pages are.
Oh.
And... no! I can write this on my wall.
But that's the thing, it's done so well.
No, it's
done
not!
So well.
Hey, what is
surprise!
What's the... I knew he was going to pop his claws, and the fact that they needed this...
No, they're letting you know how big
look
of a
the
deal
font.
It is.
How big of a deal?
It's red.
Yeah, look at the
it's red
on this.
Is that the centerfold?
No, it's the end reveal of the issue.
For Comic Geek, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, for me, I was like, oh, yeah.
I'd just like to point out, I created that sound effect.
Well, it must be so gratifying to see it so big. It's big.
Tom Warszakowski could letter it better.
Okay.
Maybe and Will in X-Men Forever.
Okay. Oh, nice.
I just have one question.
Sure.
Okay, when you open an emergency exit of a 747, presumably at 40,000 feet, there's usually a reaction from the interior of the plane, and it's not just staring out the window looking at the view. Is this perhaps applying logic a little too closely?
Well, in the Ultimate Universe, it's a little bit different. In that you don't have to explain a lot of your writing. See Ultimatum.
I try explaining, but then I get emails from people saying,
points
online,
stuff
saying,
that.
I write too much. Yeah. So we're going back to where's that word?
Snake.
There we go.
It'll sneak right up on you.
Oh, here's another good
snake
one.
Snake right up on you.
And so
I like Wolverine and the Iron Man armor.
Yeah.
I know.
I don't know how it fits.
Spoiler. Yeah.
Or where the batteries come from, but.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of rewarding moments in the Old Man Logan where you get to see some fun stuff. Someone who's read comics a long time.
My curious question is, for a character who we know for a fact was in World War II as a young man, and from the movie World War I as a young man, and the Civil War as a young man, and Thermopylae.
Yeah, Thermopylae.
So why? What is there about the 50th? The mid 21st century, is it global warming or pollution that has led to his aging?
Yeah.
So dramatically?
I think, he lives hard.
No, that's Die Hard.
That's a
totally different franchise.
Well, I think he was in so many one shots that he just got old. It happens to a lot of
kids. He one shot as well.
Is that still
not? It's not as many one shots.
Very lively audience.
Moving on to another Titanic.
Thank God it's
issue.
Over.
Trinity number 52. Bring
fold
it in.
Fold it up. Give him the whole thing.
Give the do.
There
bring
you go.
It in to this.
Three covers.
52 issue long series.
I left it at 25, so there you go.
Pete, you haven't been reading this, so you don't have much to say.
I mean, that's the thing. It really, I left it when they left doing stories about Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
There was a good 20 issues
yeah.
where they weren't in it at all. They talked about them a little bit, but I was just like, I signed on for these three characters. And when they got away from it, I kind of left as well.
I've been reading this comic on the treadmill. It's a fine treadmill comic. No, seriously, you know, like Spider-Man's the cross-trainer, and Trinity's the treadmill.
It's quite a workout.
Not mentally.
Faster.
Yeah.
It's a really schematic comic. Like, you can tell that Busiek and Bagley planned this thing to within an inch of its life.
Yeah.
It's super, super structured, and there's something about that that's kind of neat that they planned out the whole thing. And then there's something that's like everything feels like it was predetermined before. There's not a lot of spontaneity to the whole series.
Yeah.
And this is just like, okay, and this is how everything ties up. I love, one of the reasons that I love 52 so much when 52 was running is you never had any idea where it
seems
it was
like
going.
The Wild West. Like,
yeah, anything.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was just being like, okay, we got to get this issue done this week. What's going to happen?
Yeah,
kill someone. Oh, I don't know what. Who? As much as the craft in Trinity was fun to look at, there wasn't that spark.
I agree completely. Like it just seemed so dead. And I even like the ideas in it. In this last issue, there were some nice speeches by different characters, but all across the board, especially like Bagley's art, he does it so quickly that it's just like so flat.
I like the look of it. I think he's a really good storyteller.
Yeah.
He's really good at like getting the flow of the story. I just waited for something like really spectacular to happen. But the most exciting thing about this issue is that Wednesday Comics is coming out next, which is DC's next big weekly endeavor. I'm so psyched about that.
Wednesday Comics?
Yeah, it's going to be a bunch of shorts, like short shorts. like one big shirt.
Like Daisy Duke shorts?
It's this big by this big. Giant oversized, like 30 panels on a page, and like one page a piece of I think 16 different characters by 16. And they're choosing kind of off, like Hawkman's going to be one of the characters. They're choosing like kind of B characters, so it's a pretty big risky move, I think. Batman's going to be on the cover of each one, apparently.
B character,
definitely. But I've seen some pages from it that have been posted online, like the Paul Pope, Adam Strange stuff. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Kyle Baker Hawkman is gorgeous.
Wow.
Yeah. I know, and I love Adam Strange, but who likes Adam Strange? Oh, Adam Strange. Okay. Go ahead. All right, cool. moving on to Mouse Guard, Winter 1152, number 6 of 6.
Where are we going with that?
I don't know. This is like a trip to a petting zoo. Pete loves
it. It's a petting zoo where all the little creatures have weapons. It's the greatest.
How do you feel reading a series where all the characters could be ended by a tractor? Like your whole thing is like badass things, and these bunnies are.
it's a fun little world, and it's a quick read, and
it's
I feel
a fun little world.
Did you set a price on that fun little world?
Yeah, it's an expensive.
Welcome
book.
To the 21st century.
Yeah.
And I will say the art is
$350. This seems perfectly reasonable.
That's the hardcovers are expensive. Were you going to say something, Chris?
Well, there's a one-eyed owl.
Yeah.
That's the most badass character.
Wait, he's only got 1 foot.
Oh man, holy I spoke
man.
Too soon. Now that guy lives hard.
Dies hard too.
Die Hard something out. It's a different.
Die Hard Dead Owl. But this is really gorgeous.
It is. The art's beautiful.
Thank you.
And
beautiful.
It's just a little too for me. It's a little too like Lord of the Ringy. When not the cool parts. The part where he's like. Gryffindor, begat you, like the Bible where it's born. Like the begat.
Actually, thinking of them as mice sort of adds a whole new dimension to the siege of Gryffindor that I hadn't thought of before.
Yeah.
Oh,
if it was like
Ian McKellen as a mouse.
Ooh.
No.
That could be cool.
No, that would mean Aragorn would be a mouse, and that wouldn't be cool.
Why? You like it. Yeah, and like they were going after a sandcastle, and there was like a crab.
And a snake.
I kind of like the owl though. That was a sad thing.
Yeah.
When the owl died.
It's very fun. It's very enjoyable. It's imaginative. It's a fun read. I don't see why you hate it so much.
No, I don't hate it. I actually like it, but I think it's funny that you like it because you don't like. Cute things.
Yeah, but they're
you crush cute things. You get off on the Punisher shooting like children.
Well, I don't get off. It's not like I'm home masturbating.
You were just practically jerking off to the word snicked. Got you.
Got you.
Moving on to another of Pete's cute obsessions, Usagi Yojimbo, number 120. Pete, you love this series. It's a long running.
Well, it's awesome that it's still going. It's one of the earlier comics that I fell in love with as a kid. I love the black and white art. It's what's great about it is it's the same people working on it. It's it's kind of the same, but it's still great. You know, it's still Yosaki is a man of principle, which I enjoy, and he doesn't change his principles for anybody, and it's something you can look up to and look forward to.
Aww. That's nice. It's very cute in the sword. What do you guys think of Usagi? Have you read it throughout its...
I'm hoping we get the same sort of response with the X-Men. They're cute. I've been doing it for a long time. Keep trying until we get it right.
Not having read Usagi Yojimbo is a source of shame for me.
That actually sounds like a line from the book.
Yeah. Stick by those principles. So you haven't read... Did you read this?
I have not read this one.
That's right. I didn't read it either. The Amazing Spider-Man Short Halloween number 1.
fan in the back, written by Bill Hader and Seth Meyers, with beautiful art by Kevin McGuire. This, Pete, you...
Okay, here's my deal. I was very excited about the fact that Bill Hader and Seth Meyers were going to work on a comic, because to me that means, oh man, Spider-Man's going to be even funnier than he normally is. It's just going to be laughs and hysterical antics. What's Spider-Man going to do if they're in control of the wheel? Like, what kind of crazy things are going to happen? And it's a... If you wouldn't have told me it was written by Bill Hader and Seth Meyers, I wouldn't have guessed it.
But what if I didn't tell you? Would you have... Well, you wouldn't have looked at the cover. But would you have liked it?
They're on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that time.
Yeah. Well, you wrote the number content players issue of Marvel Team Up, right?
Yeah, but that was when it was funny.
Yeah. Oh! Yes!
Hey-o!
I meant Spider-Man.
Yeah, right. Get controversial.
What?
Get controversial.
So, anyways, I just feel like, you know, they're like, okay, here's the pitch. What if it's Halloween and a drunk guy Spider-Man, and then the real Spider-Man's next to him, and then they think this drunk Spider-Man, and the real Spider-Man's the drunk guy.
I don't know if
they come on, that possibility is reckless.
I don't know if they.
And then the drunk guy beats up the villains.
This is the way always.
And Spider-Man doesn't do anything. Oh my God! I write for SNL.
I doubt they pitched him just like that. It was probably over email. Actually, you know what?
Wow, she's got talking hands.
Yeah, the villains are kind of weak. but she's not just talking hands. She has lipstick-covered lips on her hands. Which
and
I was
shoulders.
Wondering. I was wondering why she puts lipstick on the lips.
Kind of hot.
Okay. That's why. Wait, why is it hot?
Okay.
We don't
lips,
what is
on,
she?
Lips on shoulders is hot.
Why?
I'm just trying to help him out.
No, cool. I think this is getting sexually weird.
Wait. Where's Mary Jane?
Oh.
Oh.
Yes.
Don't you dare.
Oh,
come on.
Oh, okay, sorry.
There.
Je suis très confused.
You're
almost
happier this
made
way.
It through.
Yeah.
I'm happy you're confused. Oh,
yeah, you
she's
want,
on a,
that explains a lot.
You don't
want to
know.
She's
you
on a vacation.
Okay.
Bill Hader and Seth Meyers actually, the reason this comic got made is because they met a bunch of guys on our show, and they were on our show a couple, like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And they met, who was it? Ed Brubaker, Matt Fraction, and those guys, and had a little friendship, and then this came out of it.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's not so good. moving on, I actually liked it. I thought it was a good read. If you weren't looking for ha-has the whole time, I thought it was a fine comic.
I was just surprised that they're like, let's make, you know, they tried to make a really good comic instead
well,
of something that was fun.
Hater couldn't do is Vincent, yeah. That's an ultimatum. We're looking at the obituary of Professor Xavier.
Ultimatum is what?
It's where everyone in the Ultimate Universe dies, pretty much. Oh man, we just blew his mind.
But this isn't this universe.
Right, right. That's the regular moment. Do you know a guy named Jeff Loeb?
You know, I thought life was complicated just having my own little universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I can't tell the players with a scorecard.
Yeah, right. With a database. Rapture, number 1 of 6, by Dark Horse, from Dark Horse.
Now, you love this comic.
Yeah, I like Mr. Avon Oeming's art.
But what about the fact that it's a relationship? There's a guy and a girl in
right.
her trouble. You love this kind of stuff. I just pictured you reading it like, yeah. Relationship stuff in comics.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. And I jerked off to it.
Wow.
No, this is a snick.
Speaking of a relationship,
mm-hmm.
there was this great story the other day about this couple that they came from another city to New York. And he's like the most powerful man in the world, and she's his beautiful wife, and they went to the theater, and they went to dinner, and then they went away, and everybody was impressed. Well, see, life imitates art.
True that.
He's, of course, talking about...
Superman.
Yeah. Superman and Lois Lane. No, the Obamas. This comic, the art is beautiful in this.
It actually looks really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird face on the atomic cloud, though.
I know, I thought it looked like a puppy. Sort of like an underwater puppy.
Oh, no, I was thinking it looks like
an underwater puppy.
Like an aquatic puppy.
Wait, you gotta hold that up. People gotta see what you're talking about.
No, I actually think it looks like the alien on...
Futurama?
No, not Futurama, the one after it.
Lost.
No, cartoons.
Ghostbusters
2. Oh, well, I remember it 3 of
them. American Dad.
Thank you.
Wow, astute audience member. This is a great read. It's a little confusing, but I think it's a good start to a new series. Dealing with kind of superheroes wrecking the world and the people they're left behind. Moving hastily on to the last topic we're going to talk about, Dark Reign the Hood, number 1 of 5. Finally fleshing out this character that no one sees his face very often. Pete, how did you like it?
Well, the Hood is interesting because we're finding out how all of a sudden a B-level kind of villain, or C-level maybe, comes to all this power, and all of a sudden a more badass than normal, and through this you get to see a little bit under the hood what he's all about, and kind of like, you know, how things came to be. There was a lot of stuff I liked about it. I really enjoyed the art. I liked some of the story, but some of the stuff I was like, the fact that he's kind of got two things going on, and it's you just see that, like, oh, this is gonna blow up in his face.
The hood, yeah. Because he's cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
The Hood is like Norman Osborn's lackey. He's dating Madame Mask. He has a wife and kid at home. He's also half possessed by the demon Dormammu, who he is fighting with all the time. He's after the Eye of Agamotto, and like, there's so much going on. I like the character. I just want him to put a flag in what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking about this issue. Like, okay, there's a lot of stuff going on. What is this comic about?
Yeah.
Although, I have to say, like, I like a lot of what Jeff Parker writes. Jeff Parker is another guy who lives... I live in Portland, Oregon, where, like, every cartoonist in the world pretty much lives. And Parker is one of the guys who's in the studio called Periscope Studios that has, like, 25 cartoonists working out of it.
Wow.
You know, it's him, Steve Lieber, and Ron Randall, and Colleen Hoover, and Paul Tobin. And, like, there's this giant sort of brain trust of cartoonists there. So I see him around town.
Cool.
I like
so, could you tell him to like fix this?
Were you like, "Hey, Parker, get it together on this one"? What's going on?
I may have to. Well, he doesn't know us. Okay. I like what's here. I'm wondering where it's going.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that they like he's obviously a villain, but they make so much hay out of him like cheating on his wife.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is his wife is going to take him down. She's going to find out that not only is he cheating, but he's this, you know, half-possessed demon. She's not going to have any of it.
Wow. What a jerk. I know. Ladies, on that Jerry Springer-esque note, let's move on to our favorite section here on the show, because it's a section that you make up, audience questions. And for that, we're going to have Boothman.
Come on over here, buddy. Have a seat.
Hand around on your sock feet on stage.
He lives in the booth, that's why he's dressed like that.
Yeah.
It's later than you think.
So I got some questions.
Please.
Like, there was like 80 about X-Men, but I threw those out.
Nice.
Well, I'm done.
Punched.
This is for Mr. Claremont specifically. Which classic X-Man deserves a character facelift?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, I think we could all like that. You know,
all?
I mean, he should go
first. Oh, I'm sorry, were you talking to me?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, the other
one
is Claremont.
Specifically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sorry. I have no sense of humor, but I keep trying. What was the question again?
Which X-Man do you think deserves a character facelift?
Not just a face.
The whole
deal.
Revamp. Oh! Hair, you know, clothes.
Yeah, fingernails.
Scott.
Yeah.
See, one has to draw a very specific differentiation between the X-Men universe as you perceive it, which is the 300 billion books that are currently on sale, mm-hmm. and the X-Men universe as I perceive it, which is the right one. And in my X, that will be on sale next week. At a considerably lower cumulative price, because you don't have to buy the other 45 titles. You only have to buy the one title every 2 weeks. Therefore, you will actually come away from the experience with a lot more cash in your pocket that you can invest and help build the national economy.
I think that answered the question.
Yeah. Invest.
Well, facelift.
Cyclops.
I mean, Deadpool is probably cinematically in need of help.
Yeah.
But first of all, he's got to get some scotch tape
yeah.
to put his head back together. you know, I can't. Everyone would like me to say Scott, but Scott is actually. I spent a year trying to get rid of him in the workup to Forever, and the harder I tried, the more essential he became. So Scott's mutant power is actually to prove that he is the right character for the book, and this is the right book for the character, and stick around and see what happens next.